Our scripture reading comes from the very first book of the Bible this morning in Genesis, chapter 22. We're going to be starting at verse number 1 and going through 8. Verse 1. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, "Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain that I will show to you." Early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son, Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I go with the boy over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." Verse 6. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, "Father." "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and wood are here," Isaac said. "But where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And the two of them went on together. God bless America.
Thanks, Chad. See if you can start the video. It's a pretty simple one. You don't need really any sound along with it. I just want to invite you to watch a father in the first moments with his daughter.
So she recognizes your voice.
Maybe for you, if you are a mom or dad yourself, you can think back as far ago as that was to those moments you first held a newborn child. If you haven't, maybe the video helps you to capture a little bit of that. There is a unique human experience right across all culture, throughout all time. Doesn't matter how scientific we get, how much we know about how all that happens, there still is a profound sense of wonder. Is there not? Right? Even when you know everything that's going on, you have books that tell you how large it is on this day and how large it is on that day, and you know everything is going to come, you have ultrasounds that show you all those things. When you finally hold that child in your hands, you're kind of amazed that somehow you're involved in this. Right? There's this question that comes up, like, I did this? Right, and we know that biologically, yeah, we did, but then we also have this amazing sense that this is way bigger than whatever I did. Be you the mom or the dad, either one, you have that wonderful moment captured at least a little bit when that child first comes out, that this is bigger than just me. Right, all the wonder of this little living creature that is unique and alive and vibrant is larger than my own capacity to create, to form, to envision, to pull all those things together, right? So there's a beautiful moment in that. What usually transpires then is that as the child ages and before long, maybe that sense of wonder and awe diminishes and passes through the years, does it not? We find ourselves, and you can jump ahead then to, you know, we have that sense of kind of cherishing and holding on to that newborn and delighting in it. And then as that moves on, you can go to the next picture, Steve. We have a sense more of ownership of our children, more of expectation of our children. So that sense of, oh my gosh, this is so much bigger than me, almost transitions more to the point of, look what I have done. Look what I have wrought as you look at my children. Right, and so we get frustrated when what we've wrought doesn't turn out as well. When it turns out well, then we're not too sad to fluff our feathers a little bit and say, look at how successful my children are, look at how amazing they are, look at what they've accomplished. And we often tie ourselves up tremendously in our own kids. their sense of their success, their sense of their value. We begin to define ourselves out of that with this sense of ownership. And so we see kind of both ends of that spectrum. When the child comes out, there's a sense of this is bigger than just me, right? There is a miracle at work here that is not just my own creation. And as they get older, there certainly is at least a temptation to say, this is what I have made. Look at what I have accomplished or done, or don't look, because I didn't turn out quite as well along those lines. So as we journey into this story of Abraham, we have today and next week on Abraham, then we'll go to 1 Timothy and the weeks to follow after that. But as we look at this story of Abraham, what we find is a situation where he has gone his entire life without having kids. There are members here who have not been able to have children, and so that sense of barrenness is one that we understand as well. All of us have at least some touch point. If you can imagine a life where you were married and unable to have kids, there'd be some moment where you would let that dream die. If you're a woman, it's going to die sooner for you because your capacity is just going to be over, right? Probably somewhere in the 40 range, right? You're going to say, okay, I will accept, as hard and painful as it is, that I have a life without kids, right? If you're a guy, it's going to be a little bit later on, but at some point also, you're going to say, I accept that that is not what God has for me. And so when we pick up the story and Abraham is 75, he and Sarah both have died to that dream. Right, they've already come to the point of saying, we will live. And maybe that's one of the reasons it wasn't so hard for them to go on this journey into Canaan, right? We have nothing we're really leaving behind. We don't have kids to worry about. We have no dreams of grandkids. We have none of those things of settling in and building this big communal family around us, right? They're kind of free, right? It's looking at each other, right? Sarah, yeah, Abraham, yeah, why not, right? They've already died to that. And then in that moment, God breathes this amazing promise over them. And says, what you thought was gone, I want to give back to you. And that had to be kind of a heady moment for them. Like to say, well, maybe we will actually have kids. I'm not quite sure how it's going to happen, but God has promised and said that. And so they begin to journey back into that. And then we have that transition or that period from 75 to 99. So for 24 years. All they have is a God who endlessly comes back to them and says, you are going to have a child. And they can't have one. And so by that point, the dream dies another death, right? The first death is just kind of my expectations and hopes. And the second one is that death of my own involvement in this. By the time they are 99, or Abraham is 99, they have tried every physical way possible to have a child. And they know they can't do it. There's no amount of wealth, no amount of material. They can't even work it out through a servant. That's not the way it's going to work. God says, no, it's going to happen through you. All their own ideas and their plans and their processes, they cannot find a solution. There is no physical hope that they have inside of themselves. There is no financial hope that we're going to pay for this enough. There's no, if we're patient long enough, it's going to happen. All that has been drained dry. There is not even a moral hope for them. As though sometimes we make a deal, God, if I'm really good, will you give this gift to me? If I'm just obedient enough, if I'm faithful enough. So context matters for us. And I know this story, this chapter of chapter 22, is one of the highlights where we see this bold, courageous Abraham and his faith. But context is essential because two chapters before and chapter 20, you could read it over the week if you wanted to. If not, I'll give you the highlights. Abraham screws up big time. He lies about his wife. He doesn't trust God in that relationship. He wants to protect himself. He's afraid. He's a sniveling little cowardly liar. This isn't in his youthful days when he's 18 and we all make stupid choices. This is after all those years of journeying. And so even for Abraham, in his own sense of his morality, he has nothing to rely on. He can't even say, God, look, I have been faithful to you for the last 24 years. Never have I turned astray. Never have I doubted you. Never have I looked somewhere else. He can't make that promise. He knows clearly, I do it regularly. So recognize for Abraham, going into the birth of Isaac, he has lost over 99 years any hope that this is about him at all. So when Isaac is born to Abraham, now you can go to the next picture then, right? That's a good sense of what it kind of felt like, right? When you're 100 years old, you get your firstborn son. That's my dad. There was that precious moment that all of us as parents, if we've had a child, know, right? That awe and that moment of saying, this is bigger than me. But Abraham is unique because for most of the rest of us, as we engage with our kids, that diminishes over time. And we begin to think there's ownership and investment and engagement. And for Abraham, that didn't change. See, that sense that Isaac is a miracle for Abraham was not encompassed merely in the first couple hours of his existence. Isaac was a miracle his whole life. It was total grace. It was 100% God, not 99.9 or not God, you started going. It was this sense, this is all God. Like it had been beaten out of Abraham over the course of decades, any sense that this is something I have done, this is something I have contributed to, there is some small part in this that is about me. Right? All of that has been taken away until every time Abraham looks at Isaac, he says, you are a miracle. And that changes this whole story. Context is so essential. When we produce something, right? When we achieve something, when we create something, we carry with it this sense of ownership that says, I don't want it wounded or injured or taken away from me, right? So when we create or establish or provide something, we have this sense of a fear of loss that goes along with it. So the things that we cling to and hold on to, we're like, I'm afraid of losing that because I know how much it took for me to get that. Abraham never had that sense because he didn't get it. He didn't work for it. He didn't achieve it. Isaac is not the accumulation of 99 years of his hard work, of his effort, of his work with his wife, of his work with God. It isn't any of those things. You cannot read it that way. Isaac is a miracle. Isaac is total grace. Isaac is all about God, not about what Abraham has done. The whole factor with Abraham, not the key factor, not the primary one, not the most essential, the entire issue with Isaac is God. Right? There's nothing that is about Abraham, no part of it that is about what Abraham has done or what he's been a part of. So God has taught Abraham then over the course of 99 years, so recognize it took a long time, to begin from the position of the second mountain. That everything is gift. It's not earned, it's not achieved, I don't have some investment in it that I need a return back to me on. It is entirely gift. And when things are gift, you don't grab onto them the same way they are that things are earned. Most of us, as we engage with this story, see something radically different than Abraham. Kind of the common consensus is, this story frustrates me about God. How can God be so cruel? How can he be so capricious? How can he be so heartless? How can he have taken so long to give the kid and then want to take it away? What kind of God even believes in child sacrifice? I am done with this kind of God. Right? It's easy to come to that perspective when you come to the story looking from the first mountain. When you come looking at what I've achieved and what I've gained, and then you begin to see this is a story about loss and a God who's not afraid to take things away from you. That's all first mountain perspective. And honestly, if you view the story from that orientation, that says more about you than it does about the character of God. When we live in a mindset that says, my life is my possession, and it is there for me to define, then we automatically live with a place of a fear of loss. And we move in a lot of arenas to say, I don't want to lose my spouse or my boyfriend or my girlfriend. I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to lose the house that I have. I don't want to lose my retirement. I don't want to lose my kids. I don't want to lose this, right? Everything is about how do I not lose things in life? And then the great griefs in life happen when we lose something that we expected to be able to hold on to or maintain. All of that is a first mountain orientation. All of that is from this perspective of how do I keep and hold on to these things. Note Abraham has none of those things in this passage. As we look at understanding the Bible, honestly, most of us do it backwards. And almost our initial response very frequently when we come to the Bible is to hear a story and then say, how do I feel about that? It's our gut level response. It's just kind of where we go. What I'll tell you is that's not a wrong question with the Bible. It's a wonderful question, but it's also the very last one that you should ask as you seek to understand what it's saying. It's a good question. How do I personally feel in my own experience about this? It's a good question, but it's the last question. The first question we always ask as we come is context. Right? All these stories fit within larger stories, right? Even this one story of Abraham fits within over 100 years of stories of Abraham. Right, so you got to filter it in and thousands of years of stories about God. And so you got to come back and say, wow, is this a consistent habit of God that he regularly comes to individuals and says, I want you to sacrifice your child? If that doesn't occur regularly, then probably that's not the main point we ought to get out of there, right? The context defines something else within there. After context, the very next thing we always ask if we want to understand the Bible appropriately is not how do I feel about it, but how did the people in the original situation experience this? So as much as we come to the story of God coming to Abraham saying, sacrifice your son Isaac, and we come with fear of loss, and we come with frustration with God, and we come with this distrust of him now, how can I ever trust you with anything in my life? Because you might ask me to give up the very most important thing to me, and now I want to be distant from you and hold on to things even tighter. Right? We can come with all those things, but Abraham comes with exactly none of those. Does Abraham show the slightest bit of fear in this passage? Does he have any hesitation in this passage? Does he doubt God in this passage? Does he express frustration with God in this passage? Or anger or animosity or distrust or say you are capricious and not worth following after? None of that. So if we want to understand what it's really saying, we should listen to how Abraham understands things. Not to our own personal experience if God were to come to us right now. Because remember, you're in a different situation. God has not spent 99 years cleansing you of your own sense of control over your child. And so God and Abraham come to this place where Abraham, in that passage, says, you, God, are my friend. And even if I don't understand my friends, I trust them. You, God, made Isaac live once when nothing else around said he ever ought to live. So for you to do it twice doesn't seem that insanely difficult to me. Right? You brought life out of this elderly couple. So bring a life out of a sacrifice. I don't know how it's going to work out. I don't know where it's going to go, but I'm not too worried about it. Chapter 21, verse 12, God comes again, and he says it over and over again. And he comes to Abraham, and he says, Isaac is the son that I am going to give you all of these future generations out of. He's the one the promise comes through. Yes, I love your other son, Ishmael. I love him. I'm going to bless him too. But Isaac is the one the promise lives out of. So Abraham, in this passage, is able to say, I know the kids are going to come out of Isaac. I know no matter what happens today, God is going to bring offspring out of this son of mine, so I'm not afraid right now. Right? That is the power of this friendship with God that has come to a place of trust that says, I know your promises are secure. And you promised that I'm going to have grandkids through Isaac. You said it to me again and again. And I believe you. All right, that's a second mountain orientation. It says, I know God fulfills his promises. I don't have to always understand it. I don't have to have an answer for those things. In the same way that if a dear friend of yours called you up and said, I need you here right now. I can't explain why. It's the most important thing I could ask of you. Would you go? Yes. Right? Because I trust you. And if you say that you need me, I'm there. Right? And that's the exact same friendship that Abraham and God had. Where he said, I know you're not going to understand it, but I need you to do this. And Abraham's like, okay.